This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. How prepared is our state and our nation for the graying of the baby boomers? What strategies are in place to ensure that there's enough long-term care to go around for everybody and that nobody has to grow old, penniless, uncared for? These are just some of the questions that the Jefferson Area Board of Aging has to deal with and has to plan for. On Friday, June 24th, JABA held a one-day seminar to prepare for the 2005 White House Conference on Aging to be held this December. These conferences occur once a decade, and in the past they've served as catalysts for the development and enhancement of national, state, and local aging policies in the U.S. This MP3 is the first half of the conference, which includes a little bit of the basic setup before the keynote speech, and the keynote speech as well from Bob Blancato, the National Coordinating Committee Chair for the White House Conference. But first you're going to hear from Enid Krieger. She's the chair, and she's going to be the MC for these proceedings, and so I'll let her take over. Krieger is a member of the JABA Ethics Committee.
At this time, April Holmes, who is the 2020 Long-Term Care Path Project Director, and she's also staff of the Community-Based Support Group, will give an overview of the Long-Term Care Project. April?
I'm the Project Director for Long-Term Care Partners Acting Together for Health. The recommendations that are being presented in breakout sessions were developed as part of that project. It's funded through the Robert Wood Johnson program called Community Partnerships for Older Adults. What they do is provide funding, support, and technical assistance to foster community partnerships to improve long-term care and supportive services to meet the current and future needs of older adults. This project is an outgrowth of the 2020 Community Plan on Aging, which was developed with input from over 300 community members, and what the plan is to prepare the community for the growing senior population in our region. The task of 2020 Long-Term Care Partners Acting Together for Health, or 2020 LTC PATH, is to enhance our community partnership, to develop a strategic plan for improving long-term care, and we're doing that by looking at three areas: transitions between healthcare settings, affordable and assisted and accessible housing, and then community-based supports that enable seniors to live in the environment of their choosing for as long as possible. Three committees, one for each area, completed a needs assessment, prioritized the needs that were identified through that process, and drafted strategies to address those needs. Today, you'll hear from those committees and have an opportunity to provide input for the strategic plan. I guess that's it. Thank you.
Now you need to meet our committee chairs and staff, because as I said earlier, so many people and so many organizations have come together to do these strategies. We have, for the Transitions Committee, Dr. Mary Preston is the chair, and that committee is co-chaired by Claire Curry, who's right here from the Legal Aid Justice Center, and Cindy Wesley, who's unable to be here today. Housing is chaired by Harrison Rue, who you'll hear from later on, and Peter Loesch from the Piedmont Housing Alliance. He's the staff. And community-based support is Debbie Williams is the chair, but she can't be here with us today, and April Holmes is the staff. So those are your three committees you'll be hearing from. We also have three expert responders this afternoon. Only two of them are here right now, and you'll hear from them in a few minutes. Dr. Mark Williams on the end here is the Ward K. Ensminger Distinguished Professor of Geriatric Medicine, and he'll be responding to transitions recommendations. And Katie Roper is the Executive Director, Senior Navigator, and she'll be responding to community-based support recommendations. We also have the delegates who are going to the White House Conference on Aging, and they'll be going in December to represent our region. Dr. Richard Lindsay, whom everybody knows. He's a member of the board of JABA, and he's faculty at UVA School of Medicine. You've already met Katie Roper, and, of course, Gordon Walker is one of our delegates who'll be going. So, without any further ado, I'll ask Gordon to come and welcome you and to introduce Robert Blancato.
I want to thank you all for being here, and good morning. Also want to thank the Darden Business School for rolling out the red carpet for us. It's not often that nonprofit organizations get an opportunity to have conferences in such nice headquarters, and I want to thank Mark Reisler, who's Associate Dean at the Darden Business School, who also is on JABA's board, for his help with this. Thanks very much, Mark. You know, your attendance here today demonstrates a willingness to grab a piece of the puzzle of long-term care and work towards creating a system that can benefit people from all walks of life. And during our proceedings here today, I would like for you to think about three axioms. One is that the future is not what it used to be. Our challenge is significant. We must plan for an elderly population that no one experienced yesterday and prepare for an aging society that no one knows yet. But also, the plans for the future should guide but not dictate. We live in a changing world, so planning is an ongoing process, a composting of events and personalities. The second one is, you've probably all seen this on a bumper sticker, think globally, act locally. Aging is a worldwide phenomenon. It impacts on all of us, regardless of where we live. But our capacity to respond to this phenomenon is far greater in our own community and in our own lives. And thirdly, it is better to light a candle than curse the darkness. While for some aging is a hardship, for many it is also an opportunity. Aging in old age does not have to be a bummer. We can rise above the negatives and accentuate the positives. The health profession, the housing industry, government, and academia are well represented in our audience today. You are sharing your expertise, your empathy, and experience of working with and thinking about persons who need long-term care. While we do the best we can as professionals to represent the interests of the persons most affected by a fragmented and underfunded long-term care system, there are those who are not here today that we need to hear from in greater numbers. The homebound, the nursing aide who cannot get away from work, the family caregiver stuck at home, the isolated elderly, and others whose opinions are needed if the best intended plans are truly to work. Failure to plan is to plan for failure. Without their input, added also to the value of your thoughts that you will share with us today, our efforts will not be complete. So April Holmes will be in touch with each of you this summer, requesting your assistance a little bit further. You will receive a brief survey instrument and cover letter asking you to take a few minutes to gather information from two persons who are not typically asked for their opinions about long-term care. This could be a member of your church, your synagogue or civic organization, a colleague at work, or a parent or a friend. This information you obtain when returned will better assure citizen participation in this process, thus improving the likelihood that our planning will truly succeed. Thankfully, we have a keynote speaker here today whose opinions and observations have helped shape long-term care policy at both the federal level and the state level. I know he hasn't gotten everything he's proposed or asked for, but at least he's pointed in the right direction. He's also a Virginian, and some years back, I can't remember how far back, but he was selected as Advocate of the Year by the State Association of Virginia Area Agencies on Aging and the Virginia Coalition on Aging. So I like to think of his first love as being out of Virginia. Now I'll read what he told me to read. Bob Blancato is president of the Matz, Blancato & Associates, a firm integrating government affairs, association and coalition management, and advocacy services. He assumed this position in 1996. Immediately prior, he served as executive director of the 1995 White House Conference on Aging, being appointed by President Clinton. Bob spent more than 20 years on Capitol Hill, mostly with the House Select Committee on Aging. He currently serves on the Policy Committee and Executive Committee of the 2005 White House Conference on Aging, appointed by Representative Nancy Pelosi. Bob is currently the president of the National Committee for the Prevention of Elder Abuse, national coordinator of the Elder Justice Coalition, and president of Americans for Long-Term Care Security. He also serves on the board of directors of the American Society on Aging, senior navigator, and the Great Western Urban League. He holds a BA from Georgetown and an MBA from American University. And I want to thank Bob a lot for being here as His child graduated from fifth grade last night, and he still was able to get up this morning and get down here. And thanks for being here, Bob.
That applause was worth the 5 a.m. Good morning to all. Now, you have to show a little enthusiasm, you know. Thank you, Gordon, for a nice introduction, and it's wonderful to be back with a Java project. It's funny to be in an auditorium again, since I was in one last night for my daughter's graduation, but this one is far nicer, I must say. I'm glad that in my introduction you did not refer to me as a lobbyist, because this has not been a good week to be a lobbyist. You may have heard of our new hero in Washington, D.C., Mr. David Grosch. If you have not, let me just read you an excerpt from the New York Times of the other day when the hearings were held about the lobbyists and the Indian tribes. David Grosch was living the mellow life of an off-season lifeguard in Rehoboth Beach when his childhood friend Michael Scanlon called from Washington with a proposition. Michael Scanlon is a lobbyist, by the way. "Want to be head of an international corporation?" Mr. Grosch said, and Mr. Scanlon asked him, almost in jest. I was like, sure, and he became it. This was part of the testimony given about some lobbying activities in Washington, D.C. So I try not to associate myself with that aspect of the work. It's good to be here for any number of reasons, not the least of which is the project that you are working on relative to Project 2020, which is so much a part of your deliberations today. You know, Java, as long as I've been in this field, and it's kind of scary how many years we've all been in this field, has had a great reputation for innovation and creativity. And now partnering with the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, with its preeminent reputation for innovation and commitment to positive change and social policy change, is a great marriage. It's also great to be able to work with Java on this next White House conference on aging. And I want to join, as was mentioned earlier, congratulating Dick Lindsey and Katie and Gordon for being delegates to the White House Conference on Aging. And you will find, as this process goes forward, how important that relationship will be to what you're doing today in terms of carrying forward what is done today in Washington. And I must say, in the case of Dick Lindsey and Gordon, they're going to learn this when they get to Washington. One of our goals in this White House Conference on Aging is to change terminologies. So even though we have known each other for many years, we're not allowed to call each other old friends anymore. The new term is friends of long standing. So practice that now, between now and December. I'm also going to tell you from an observation standpoint that I believe this White House Conference on Aging, local input taking place before this conference, may actually be more important in the final outcome of this conference than even some previous ones. I am, of course, fascinated by the title and the theme today, the Rubik's Cube of Long-Term Care, Putting the Puzzle Together. Fascinated because we have been working on solving the long-term care puzzle as far back as when Erno Rubik invented the cube, which was 1974, and perhaps before. I'm fascinated because the cube was a toy that was built in his mother's apartment, which has perplexed maybe 500 million people, kind of like long-term care. I'm fascinated because the cube apparently has one correct alignment and 43 quintillion wrong ones. There's an analogy somewhere to long-term care there, too. And another thought, I guess you could have called this the Humpty Dumpty cube of long-term care, but of course, the cube has to exist for it to be broken and fixed again. So my conclusion is this. If we could finally find out who Deep Throat was, then how far behind can long-term care policy really be? Let me take a moment to bring you up to date on the White House Conference on Aging. I have provided a handout. There's some materials in your folder. One of the great things I noticed, people say, what's different from 10 years ago? I mean, the whole world is different from 10 years ago. But 10 years ago, doing the White House Conference, I said it was fascinating to be able to send emails between buildings. Now we have, the first time, a White House Conference on Aging website. And I hope it's listed on the materials that are in the folder. But if not, let me give it to you. For those who want to track the White House Conference from now until its start on December 11th, it's www.whcoa.gov whitehouseconferenceonaging.gov. Just think whitehouseconferenceonaging.gov. We are going to convene this fifth White House Conference on Aging in our nation's history on December 11th. Some of you who have been following it say, didn't you have it scheduled for October before? And the answer is yes. But as does happen sometimes, sometimes you find an unexpected level of increase of interest that you didn't anticipate that causes you then to have to change your location to a bigger site. That's basically what's happened with this White House Conference. There has been a strong level of interest from the international side on the observers wanting to come over from different countries, from the business community wanting to participate in the conference and do exhibits. And as a result of that, the decision was made by our policy committee to change the date to December 11th through 14th. This will be, as I said, the fifth in our nation's history, the first of the 21st century. And the second White House Conference on Aging, to make this slight but important distinction. President Clinton in 1995 said, we are not doing a White House conference on the aged. We're doing a White House conference on aging. Because the distinctions and the policy decisions that you're going to make have to be evaluated for their impact on future generations. This conference, by law, for the first time, must address the healthcare and economic security issues of boomers as they age. Because a White House conference has to develop ideas and the foundation for national aging policy for the next 10 years. So jump ahead to 2015. And between now and 2015, what happens with respect to boomers? Next year, the first wave of baby boomers become eligible for the Older Americans Act. In 2008, the first wave of baby boomers become eligible for early retirement under Social Security. And then the big number is 2011, when the first wave of boomers become eligible for Medicare. And trust me, that impact on all these programs is going to be pronounced. So you need to think in terms of setting up a policy that is no longer just based on senior programs. It's seniors and boomers coming forward. Because we know how much boomers have impacted society. They get given credit for a lot of things and they're blamed for a lot of things. In fact, just recently you may have seen an article that talked about how the article was entitled, Seriously, the Joke is Dead. The article is dealing with the fact that comedy is not as popular in this country as it used to be because Americans have no patience waiting for punchlines anymore. Of course, they're going to blame that on the boomers because we're so impatient, you see. We have an agenda set for this White House Conference on Aging, which is in your packet, but you can see the themes, such things as planning along the lifespan, health and long-term living, the workforce of the future, all designed to prepare us for what's been referred to as this radical change in the demographics of our country. We're in the public input process. You're part of the public input process today, and you're going to be an active part of it later on today. All aimed at developing up to 50 resolutions that will be adopted by the delegates of the White House Conference on Aging, which then become the basis for, we hope, future legislation and policy over the next 10 years. Every previous White House Conference on Aging has done that. Going back to 1961, when they with the Great Society programs that followed, the Older Americans Act and Medicare and Medicaid, were thought of and advocated by the delegates. In 1995, the National Family Caregiver Support Program, which is now part of the Older Americans Act, was a major feature called for by the delegates at the White House Conference on Aging. But I always find it interesting because the top voted resolution in 1981, White House Conference on Aging, was preserving Social Security now and in the future. The top voted resolution in 1995 was preserving Social Security now and in the future. Now, I don't go to horse racing too often, but I feel a trifecta coming here. If you were predicting a possible top voted resolution in 2005, it could well be that. But, you know, for me, it's also interesting to look back from 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I was not a member of AARP. 10 years ago, I didn't need these to read speeches. 10 years ago, we didn't have a family caregiver support program. 10 years ago, we did have an outside earnings limitation under Social Security, but we don't anymore. And 10 years ago, we did not have a prescription drug benefit under Medicare. Some cynics would say we still don't, but I won't be one of those. But the reality is that's where we were. And, of course, with long-term care, the key thing to understand is how connected this conference is to the White House Conference on Aging in two ways. One, focusing on long-term care, and two, and perhaps more importantly, focusing on solutions toward developing a long-term care policy. We on the policy committee see this White House conference as a great opportunity to elevate long-term care onto the national scene higher than it is today. And we hope, as one of our tangible goals, that we can pass a resolution that lays the foundation for national long-term care policy over the next 10 years. We also hope to do and maybe model ourselves after the 9/11 Commission that just finished its work. They were funded to do a conference and do a report and do a bunch of things, and then when they were finished, they shut down and went out and raised private money on the implementation of their ideas, demonstrating a follow-through commitment that's very important to getting things done. But before we get to the White House conference some more, let me also share a little bit about the lay of the land in Washington today on long-term care. This is, in my judgment, a very peculiar year in terms of legislation in Washington. There's a lot of uncertainty about what's going to happen between now and the end of the year. But long-term care has more buzz around it this year than I've seen in many years. It's helped by something I've always felt was needed to make it move forward. Long-term care by itself cannot be the subject of legislation that passes in any comprehensive way. It needs to be connected to a larger issue that has a stronger political imperative. This year, that could be Social Security reformed, defined more broadly than where we started. Or it could be tied to Medicaid reform to the extent that that can happen this year. Because long-term care, as you know, is a retirement security issue and will be as the boomers age. Long-term care is the largest unfunded liability confronting the boomer generation in our country. And if we go the route of what's called Social Security Plus, you've been reading about this, the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee has said, let's go beyond this discussion of private accounts. Let's open up an honest discussion about the aging of our country and address a range of issues, including long-term care. It fits right into that discussion. And with Medicaid reform, we know the issues very well. Our governor is leading the effort, the national effort, through the Governors Association to get short and long-term Medicaid reform on the table. While at the same time there's a gun pointed at our nation's head in the form of proposed $10 billion in cuts to happen in the next fiscal year for Medicaid, while the Medicaid Commission is formed to come up with recommendations on the short-term and long-term future of Medicaid. You discuss Medicaid reform in any serious way, and long-term care has to be in that discussion. And it will be beyond issues, small issues like tightening rules on asset transfers so that, you know, fewer people who are not eligible for Medicaid go on there. There's a deeper discussion that's waiting to be happened around long-term care and Medicaid. But there are also the usual legislative initiatives on long-term care that are before the Congress. Senator Grassley, the chairman of the Finance Committee, and Congresswoman Nancy Johnson, the chair of the Health Subcommittee in the House, have reintroduced their bill, the Long-Term Care and Retirement Security Act. It does three basic things. It provides a above-the-line deduction for long-term care insurance premiums. It provides up to a $3,000 tax credit for family caregivers. And it provides for cafeteria plan coverage of long-term care insurance for employers. This bill has been introduced in each of the last three or four Congresses. It always has strong bipartisan support, but it has one big problem. And if you have this problem with a piece of legislation these days, it's tough. It's called the sticker shock problem. It costs a lot of money. Projected to cost somewhere between $35 and $40 billion over 10 years to do this legislation. See, Congress operates in a very limited window in terms of its budget, 5 years and 10 years. But if you project out and pass a bill like this, there are studies out that show the savings to Medicare and Medicaid could exceed $30 billion over the next 15 years if you had some new incentives to get people to purchase long-term care insurance. There is the Ronald Reagan breakthrough bill that's been introduced in the previous Congress that would double funding for Alzheimer's research and incorporate some of those same long-term care provisions that I just referenced. There is call for expansion of what are called long-term care partnerships, which are going on in four states, where people are able to purchase long-term care insurance for a period of time, and then if and when they spend down all their assets and the insurance lapses, they can go on to Medicaid. There are a whole bunch of new initiatives that are expected on long-term care, including one that Senator Kennedy is working on right now. It's supposed to be introduced very soon. You've got the Lifespan Respite Care Act that's been reintroduced by Senator Clinton, all in the area of long-term care. And then finally, expected later this year or early next, is the reauthorization of the Older Americans Act, which now has, as I mentioned, a national family caregiver support program for the first time. But this administration wants the Older Americans Act to be an opportunity to reinforce community-based long-term care services and expanding aging and disability resource centers, which are now underway in a number of states. So add that along with the ongoing discussion about caregiving, which has really intensified as an issue over the past 10 years. And let's make it very local. How many people in this audience, for example, have caregiving responsibilities of one kind or another involving family members or know people who are doing that? Raise your hand. See? 10 years ago, you asked that question, and I used to. You would never see that kind of response. 22 million families in our country are confronted with caregiving responsibilities of one kind or another, and now it's reached a point where Congress is looking for ways to provide support for family caregivers. So the good news is there's a buzz about long-term care. The bad news is how do we get to the point of moving it from the heat to the fire, if you will? Well, the one thing you can be sure of, nothing happens overnight, and nothing happens in a radical way. Policymaking is incremental, has always been that way, and will continue to be that way. But the issue with long-term care, I think, is a little bit different historically. Because, you know, those who seek to get it all the first time in a piece of legislation never succeed. I used to work for a guy named Claude Pepper years ago. Some of you may remember that name from the House Aging Committee. You know, in 1988, when they were dealing with that famous catastrophic health care bill, which really was a catastrophe in its own way, he was saying, you know what's wrong with this bill? We've done polling. Seniors are willing to pay more money in premiums and taxes if it covers long-term care expenses. He tried to offer an amendment to the catastrophic bill. He was defeated, but his plan in 1989 would have set this country in motion for developing a long-term care policy. And he wasn't asking for it all. He was asking for it to be done little by little. But people voted it down. They said it wasn't enough. Well, guess what it is? It was a lot more than we have today. So, you know, I commend the work that you're doing leading to today and what will follow with today. Those committee reports and recommendations on needs and strategies that you've come forward with in the areas of transitions between healthcare settings, community-based support, and housing. I don't have enough time to go through all of them, but what I decided to do was share with you what's common about what you're talking about and what other people in this country are talking about who are doing similar White House Conference on Aging forums. The common ground, the need for uniform, realistic, and relevant definitions of what long-term care is. It's amazing to me how simple that solution is. Yet we are still grappling with definitions around long-term care. There's got to be a consensus reached on what long-term care is and what long-term care isn't. And the solution may rest with going about it incrementally. Take it on in some way that deals with the most common needs and develop legislation accordingly. Secondly, the need for greater public awareness and education at all levels about long-term care, about the aging of our country, about the various needs that people are going to confront as they age. Number three, very strong, need for a better trained workforce now and in the future to address long-term care needs. Number four, of course, the issue of financing of long-term care. Who pays, how much, and for what? How does the federal government help? What is the proper role of the federal government in long-term care policy? Medicaid's a given, but even with Medicaid, there's some need for changing Medicaid structure. Medicaid pays a lot of nursing home costs, and it's just now beginning to do home and community-based services, but it needs to do more of that to reflect the changing dynamics of our country. So Medicaid is important for some. The tax code could be important for others. I referenced about the deduction for long-term care insurance premiums, a family caregiver tax credit, things of that nature can be used to help in the area. And now the new term, and I don't have a good definition of it yet, but I keep hearing it around, and maybe you hear the same term, the pre-fund term, people pre-funding for long-term care. when the Social Security Plus bill comes out, you watch and see what it contains. You may see a new 401k proposal that can be used to finance long-term care. You may see a whole new bunch of vehicles, 401 withdrawals that could be converted into hybrid annuities, which could then be paid, used to pay for long-term care. Just follow the term pre-fund. It's sort of the new buzzword in Washington about long-term care. Another common recommendation, the need for system building and coordination between systems, the healthcare system, the social services system, the business systems, the research community. Access to and organization of services is something that people want to see more of in this country. The concerns of families need to be addressed in developing long-term care policy, another common thread we hear. So you can see that people around the country, and I've gone to a lot of forums and I've heard and read things, are thinking a lot like you are today. The question is, how do you move it forward into some consensus at the White House Conference on Aging? I think we can do that. And I think that long-term care is a dominant issue this time, much more than it's been in any other time in our history. There is this assumption running around that this White House Conference on Aging is going to be dominated by Social Security. I don't agree. It will certainly be an issue, but it will not and should not be the only issue that's discussed at a once-a-decade White House Conference on Aging. Because it's the delegates, Dick and Gordon and Katie, who determine from what we see what action they want to see on different issues. And if they come from this conference with good ideas on long-term care, they'll bring it to Washington. They'll develop coalitions with other delegates who may be thinking the same way, and before you know it, you're going to have a strong resolution on long-term care coming from the conference. The more important thing, too, as you focus on your recommendations, is think in terms of what's doable. What's doable? We've got to be realistic. One of the first things we decided 10 years ago was the first three White House conferences on aging produced 2,300 recommendations. I mean, let's be realistic. I mean, how can you decide what's important in that kind of a menu? The president said, let's get focused. Let's figure out what's important and vote it out accordingly. So we have a policy that says not more than 50 resolutions will be produced, and then they'll be voted out, 1 to 50. Long-term care belongs in the top 10. And you can help make that happen by what you do today. Long-term care is a coalition-building issue. But long-term care is something else you have to think about. I've given you the examples of people who are focused on long-term care. There's going to be 1,300 or 1,400 people coming to the White House Conference on Aging from all around the country. Some may be schooled in this issue and some may not. But those who are need to educate those who aren't to get them on their side to help produce a resolution. So I believe that we're on the right track with this conference. I believe even in Washington we're on the right track for some movement towards some enactment of long-term care legislation. How to put this puzzle together on long-term care? If I had the answer, I could retire tomorrow. I can go out and play golf and ride horses and do all the things that I like to do. Maybe it isn't a Rubik's Cube. There may not be one right answer. It will take a variety of answers to get us to a long-term care policy. It's going to have to include choice, quality, defining public and private role, defining the role of personal responsibility, and never lose sight of that as an important term in this. But maybe we might need to employ the Rubik grenade. Do you remember that Saturday Night Live commercial? For the grenade whose colors had to be aligned in 10 seconds or else. What I mean here is there must be a stronger political imperative associated with this issue to make it move up higher on the agenda. Long-term care is not a hypothetical issue. If you just examine one statistic and put this in your mind, long-term care cost, all forms, whether it's out of your pocket or insurance or Medicaid, now exceeds the cost of medical devices and prescription drugs combined. So we're not talking about a hypothetical small-term issue. Policy is achieved at the national level when there is merit in the cause, when there is urgency to the cause, when there's an appropriate cost-benefit ratio, when there is a political imperative that you can feel as an elected official. And one of the best ways to feel it is to make sure you take an issue as complex as long-term care and learn how to localize and humanize that issue. Because who are you dealing with? You're dealing with elected officials. They see it happening. They hear about it when they go home. It's more important that they hear about it when they go home than when they're in their offices in Washington. It's more important than when they hear from a grassroots advocate about it than a lobbyist, because they know it's an issue that affects them at home. So in closing, and I know we're going to have time for a couple questions and answers, I want to commend JABA for holding this conference on this theme for the purpose of enhancing the White House Conference on Aging. I commend you who are here for your commitment. I know each of you took time away from something else. Something else you could be doing, and on a Friday, too. But it means a lot more that you're here because you're here to contribute. And that's important. We need to go beyond today and working with the Virginia delegates and others on implementation toward a realistic, achievable, doable long-term care policy. So I'm going to close with three pieces of advice from three really different people, two of whom are from the sports world. First piece of advice, always skate to where the puck is going, not where it has been. That came from Wayne Gretzky. It has merit and thinking as you go forward. Number two, one must care about a world one may not see. So think in terms of the decisions and the issues you're going to focus on. They may take years to implement, but they could benefit generations to come. And then finally, and I know there's a few perfectionists in this room, and I defer to you for that, but I also want to caution you. We may try to achieve perfection in this area of long-term care and other things. We may try, we may make, get there, but we may not. But remember one thing about perfection. The great philosopher Yogi Berra once said, if the world were perfect, how would you know anyway? Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yes, this is an advocate. You know, by the way, this is an advocates conference, so I don't expect there to be a long pause between the first hand going up. You know, so yes.
As a local elected official, I worry that having all these local or regional pre-conferences will somehow give the White House conference a feeling that localities and regions can do it on their own. And I want to make sure that. We don't get this devolution, as we often call it, at the local level, in which it's assumed that neither money nor anything else is needed at the federal level, because you've had all these conferences and they came out with these fine reports and clearly they can do it. What kind of advice would you have, or what is the way to avoid?
I think that's an excellent question, and the first thing I would suggest is that all the local officials who feel that way should make up a sign that is paraded around the White House Conference on Aging that says, no unfunded mandates, please. No more suggestions of things that we cannot support. There's a couple ways around that. Number one, I believe that there has to be some communication between the local officials and the delegates before they go to Washington to make sure they get that message. Number two, you know, as you probably know, if you look at the composition of this conference, about 750 of the 1,200 delegates that are projected to go are chosen by either members of Congress, senators, or governors. Okay, so there's going to be a certain amount of sensitivity on the political side of things, but I think it's going to be important that the delegates go in and do, if you will, some kind of a local impact analysis before they start putting forward ideas that could impact negatively on the local communities. And I also think that you've also given me an idea that says we better look down our roster and make sure we have a few local elected officials as delegates to the conference who can come in and communicate the same message that you just did. But I think it's a totally valid point. Yes, sir.
You talked about long-term care, but my committee, we talked about affordable long-term care, which to me is subject.
Well, everybody's definition of affordable could be different. I think that the thing that people are trying to strive for on the policy side, which has been what's also kept it back, is, you know, what is considered affordable for who? I mean, let's take long-term care insurance, for example. You know, it's been a difficult product to move forward. Congress knows that if they provide some tax incentives, they may get more people to go to the market, but there's pushback from a lot of sources about the quality of the product and the cost associated with the product. So my guess is that in the course of anybody's discussion, that term affordable needs to be spelled out. You know, it's the same issue I raised before. It's all about the definition. And, you know, the definition of long-term care is confusing to people, and it isn't standardized. But so should the word affordability be involved, because financing is critical to the outcome of any long-term care legislation policy. But so, too, is the notion of what is affordable for what kind of people and what kind of products would work. That's why this notion of the pre-funding is very intriguing, because if you have the capacity and have some incentives to be able to save your own money for, you know, long-term care needs of the future, that may be more comfortable for certain people than having that money go into a particular product like a long-term care insurance product. But I think if you're going to deal with that today, then work on a definition of affordability that can, you know, that can work with a lot of people, and try to get that to Washington so that it can be incorporated in what we do. Anyone else?
We've been focusing here in our long-term care committees on three areas of transitions, housing, and community-based support.
Mm-hmm.
In anticipation of the White House conference, are these three areas similar to or the same as areas that will be focused on there? And if not, is there something we should be looking at besides these as we prepare our own delegates and think about our own issues
right
here in this community?
Good question. I definitely think you're similarly directed to where other people are doing or where other people are going. There may be different terminologies that are used to describe, you know, how people are breaking down discussions on long-term care. But, you know, housing is definitely being discussed on a regular basis, particularly the notion of the coordination of services and service coordination in housing. You know, the transition is a different term that I think you may have embarked on a sort of a new niche within the discussion of long-term care. And, you know, sometimes if you can articulate a new direction in a discussion, you know, you could end up prevailing when the time comes at the White House Conference on Aging. One of the jobs that's going to happen, and it's one I don't envy, and I don't have to get into it until a later part of the process, is that we're getting reports and resolutions from all over the country that have to be synthesized down to a point where the delegates are going to present some giant notebook about 3 or 4 weeks before you come to Washington, you three, and you're going to have about 125 resolutions synthesized down from 1,000 or whatever the number turns out to be. What we're looking for, and that's why your question is relevant, is recurring themes, recurring directions. And it doesn't necessarily present itself in the title as much as it does underneath with what you come forward with. The same way as our agenda. If you want to read our agenda, don't read just the six broad categories. Read the annotated agenda that's on the website underneath all those six topics, and that's where you're going to see the direction coming forward. So I looked at your materials, and I felt that you were on the right track. And so the terms, the titles may not be as important as what you do underneath it. So I think you're right on the right track, and stay with it. Yes?
When as I said, there's quality of the product, quality may be a little away from the three MCDs, but I just thought for those of us who are long-term care skilled nursing, 10 to 11 institutions in this county are for profit. The pay is low, and the services are very, very difficult.
The product of long-term care insurance, you mean?
Product of nursing
care. Oh, nursing care. Nursing care. Wow. Well, that's, you know, that's another sort of complicated issue, because you've got a whole range of issues that, and this is what you raise an issue that I think I probably should have touched on too. You know, a White House conference is supposed to be visionary. But you know what? When the delegates come there in December, they're also going to look at what's going on right then and now in Washington around issues. And clearly, reimbursement rates under Medicare and Medicaid in nursing is right up there. They've got to address, I mean, Medicaid, my prediction, my own feeling is that Medicaid becomes the dominant issue at this White House conference on aging. simply because you're going to be right in the middle of implementation of this potential $10 billion in cuts in Medicaid. And it's going to be a lot of pushback from people. Because 10 years ago, you know, I remember in November of or October of 1994, I'd go to forums and people would be talking about single-payer health care and universal coverage and stuff. Then in November of 94, a revolution happened in Washington, you may remember. The Republicans got elected to the Congress and controlled the Congress for the first time in 40 years, came in on the Contract with America. The Contract with America had some very focused recommendations around Medicare and Medicaid and the Old Americans Act, and these delegates came in and expressed their views on what they thought about those things. So my guess is your question relates a lot more to a present-day problem that needs to be incorporated in some of your thinking here today as well. You know, the shortcomings that exist in our healthcare system, you know, could take the rest of this week, not just today in a conference. But the reimbursement question and how the pay of workers in nursing homes, all those kinds of issues need to be brought into the discussion. So as you go forward in the day, identify some of those things and bring them into the final products that come out of there. And don't be afraid about addressing present issues as much as future issues. And I think you raise a very good point. Yes?
In addition to the reimbursement rate issues for facilities, would it be logical to approach, for the delegates to approach the inspection process, that it makes it a little more critical for both the facilities and the clients living there? Is that an issue?
Yeah. I think it's a good issue, sure. But I think what you need to do is spell out, you know, in more detail so it can become reflected in language that comes back up to the White House conference. Because, you know, there's a whole range of issues about when you bring up inspections, you know, you bring up both good issues and potentially some tougher issues. You know, we've got a big issue around elder justice that we're focusing on and, you know, the whole issue of abuse in facilities and the need for more inspections and address having much more training of people to understand what abuse is and so on. But, yeah, bring that forward. Sure, I think it has relevance. But make sure you connect it, you know, in a way that people can understand it. Think in terms of not trying to convert your colleagues here today, okay, because a lot of you all come know a lot of different things and know a lot about this area and some of the healthcare needs. Think in terms of the delegate from Nebraska, you know, or the delegate from Arkansas, who may not have the level of knowledge that you do. So when you need to spell things out, even if it sounds overly simplistic, if one of our problems is definition on terms around long-term care, well, then let's spell it out if we have an opportunity through a White House conference on aging. So spell out what inspections mean in the context of better quality care in nursing homes. I think we've done one more. Yes?
Some of what you were talking about were transitions that, I heard you correctly, you said that was new terminology, but earlier you talked about coordination. So how can they move that area forward if they're the only ones?
Well, I just say your titles is a little different than other people's. I think coordination is a topic that comes up everywhere. I think what you really have to do is not overly complicate the situation. If you know you've got a coordination problem, spell out what it is and put forward how you would recommend it be resolved in the context of achievability. Okay, in other words, you don't want to go beyond what's capable of being done. But if you can show, I mean, like in transportation, I have heard this over and over again about the need to just simply alter the routes, okay, so they get closer to the people who need the service. I mean, that's not radical thinking. You know, you can change routes, you know, go from the fixed route to something that's more flexible and accommodating to what seniors really need. That can be done fairly easily. That's not a radical idea. I've heard in at least 6 locations around the country, apparently, and maybe some of you know this to be true, there's apparently a huge lighting problem in public housing. Okay? The lighting situation in public housing is not working well for the residents as they age in public housing. There needs to be some accommodations and changes made to that area. That's not a big radical idea. So what I'm saying is don't try to get overly academic about it. You know, lay it out in such a way that, you know, people could relate to it. Because if there's a coordination problem here, some of the same elements may exist in other parts of the country. And when they all come together in Washington, they can come around and say, oh, yeah, this is, you know, here's a recurring way we could approach this issue. So I think you're right on target. My comment was about the term, the title transition is a little different than what I've heard in other places. Well, listen, thank you very much. Oh, is there a hand? I'm sorry. There's an expression in Washington, you know, you've heard leave no child behind. We have leave no hand behind. So I want to make sure I get your question here.
I guess my question is the conference going to be devoted to really these nuts and bolts issues that you've addressed? Or is there going to be an overview of what long-term care is, what are the ethics behind it, what are the objectives of all the people?
The answer is both. The answer is both. There'll be the short-term recommendations on how you achieve some incremental improvements or incremental steps toward developing a long-term care policy, and then there's going to be a larger discussion about projecting out over the next 10 years. And you raised a topic that I think is one of those cross-cutting terms that will come up and should come up throughout everybody's discussion, which is issues around ethics. You know, the whole ethical questions. I mean, I don't think a lot of people have a good grip on that. And if anybody wants to sort of tackle that in the course of conversations today, it would be probably be helpful to the White House conference. But it's short-term and long-term. So it's all how the resolution is written. You're going to find, they're all written in with certain, you know, you've written resolutions or know about resolutions. You have whereas clauses, which state certain facts that lead you to your resolve clause, which is your action step. And the action steps usually are short-term, let's do this soon. Longer term, let's get there in the next decade. So both will be addressed in this conference, and as I'm sure they will be today in your deliberations. Well, thank you all very much. Congratulations on being here. Congratulations on having a good conference, and look forward to working with you some more.
You're listening to a conference put on by the Jefferson Area Board of Aging in advance of the 2005 White House Conference on Aging. In the next installment, we'll be listening to some of the recommendations that were made at the conference. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.